Our state health department, like the other states, we get reports of diseases that are reportable, and we manipulate these reports, and we do stuff with that information, and we ignore some of the information, and we send bits of it to CDC, and we use some of it in outbreak investigations and so on. So data manipulation in one form or another is pretty much what we do for a living, and not a very good one at that. When we're considering these kinds of databases, these are the things that we strive for, and these are all important, and they're more important. Some of them are more important to some people than others, but they are all things we strive for. Flexibility in the sense that we want a system that we are able to change because we get new diseases, we come up with new things we want to track about these diseases. We cannot predict how we want to use the data very successfully in advance. We don't want to stipulate, for example, what we can search on in our database, what kind of queries we can do. Capacity, we have more and more reports that come in, and we don't want the thing to run up against some kind of limit where all of a sudden we can't enter new cases. Utility, it's not very good having a system that's incredibly sophisticated if people can't readily learn to use it, and a lot of users in real life are not necessarily very sophisticated computer people, and they have very limited experience with database usage, much less database design. So making these systems, if not idiot-proof, at least easy to for most people to do what they want to do is, as you probably know, some of you will know that have Delphi, it's actually quite a challenge. In addition, being able to anticipate what people want. Often people who are not familiar with what databases can do can't even imagine the stuff that they can do. And they're thinking, oh, this is really great. I can print out a list of all the people I need to telephone. And they don't realize that there's so much more that you can potentially do. Interoperability, we have different systems that we interface with, both within our state, local health departments, potentially private hospitals, ELR systems, as well as the need to exchange data both on a routine basis as in our reporting to CDC, but also sometimes on an ad hoc basis in outbreak investigations, for example. Data security with these is sort of obvious. And of course, not totally trivial is the cost of development of a surveillance system and the ability to keep it going. Budgets in public health are not necessarily unlimited, even in the informatics area. Our current system in Oregon is that, like probably many states, if not most, is we have a hodgepodge of things that have grown up in different agencies over the last 20 years. Some of these are rather specialized, so there's a TB database that came from CDC that's used. There's an STD database. We now have a general communicable disease, which is to say everything but HIV, STD, TB stuff, and I'll talk about that in a second. Some of our counties have their own databases, and on and on. Data transfer, while it is possible, and in fact relatively easy in certain selected scenarios, in practice becomes very difficult when table structures of databases don't really match. Again, I won't belabor the obvious, but this can, what you can say, we can do that, yeah, but it takes so long that nobody gets around to doing it in practice. We have lots of duplicate records, potentially, because people get multiple tests, people get reported more than once, and deduplication is something that we always worry about. Our primary, the primary agencies we worry about are the state, the Fed, and then the county and the state, and then every once in a while, CDC does have certain requests, if not demands, for information. And since they provide much of the funding to our health department, we have to be, or at least pretend to be, somewhat responsive to a lot of those requests. So our current system is, some parts of it are good, some parts of it are not good, and we've been trying to improve. What happened about 10 years ago is we created a new database for our surveillance, our general surveillance data. This is not a real record, but it is the real database. And we've been using this now for about 10 years. This is a fairly powerful database that has relatively limited bits of information there. It's mostly demographic information and subtyping information. There's not a lot of exposure information that is attempted to be captured electronically. We do get those records on paper, and some of our counties actually collect it electronically, and then, but we haven't stored it at the state level electronically. But it's quite it was designed for use by us in the State Health Department. It's very good for summarizing data, for getting line lists of data, for flagging records for further investigation. And again, those records can be followed up either by grabbing the paper forms in our file or by looking at other electronic records that we have access to. And it's actually quite good. There are all kinds of queries that are possible, and other ones can be added. This is just an example of things you can click on when you select a series of records, county totals, subtypes like salmonella by serogroup and all this. This is not high-level stuff. This is just kind of what we do all day long in the health department, and being able to do it quickly and easily and in a form that is flexible is very important to us. And we've actually achieved this at the State Health Department level. We have not achieved this in our local health departments, and that's been part of the problem. We've collected a very limited amount of clinical information. Again, this is looking at that same record. We got hospital admission data. Unfortunately, this guy wasn't admitted and didn't die. But we have not tried to capture a wider range. And with some of our diseases like TB, like HIV, there's certainly an interest at the programmatic level in capturing quite a bit more clinical and laboratory data than is certainly true. In the stuff that I personally spend most of my time on, which is diarrhea, we really care if the person is a lab-confirmed case, not a confirmed case, a few dates like onset and the date of the specimen. And after that, most of it is done on a relatively ad hoc level, depending on whether or not it's part of an outbreak or not. So our data needs are relatively simple. But that's not true for all diseases. So this is the system we've been using and developing. It's essentially in constant development because, and this is the interesting thing and one of the points that I'll close on as we get to our next presenter, is that this has been a homegrown system. It was not developed with our IT department. It was developed by our epidemiologists. We're the ones that run it. We're the ones that make the changes to it. And in order to do that, we've sort of had to learn how to become database developers after a fashion. And that has had some salutary benefits, and I suspect it's had some problems too. The problems are it means we don't spend as much time doing epidemiology, which was at least our original training. But at the same time, data management and learning how to develop databases has proven to be quite useful and in many other things in the application. This is one of dozens of group databases we use now. We have databases where we have outbreak records. We have databases that we use on kind of a throwaway basis for during outbreak investigations. And we use the skills that we have developed in kind of playing around in this and other databases to have those skills in the office. And I'm currently working at CDC for a few weeks on a special project related to this recent Salmonella St. Paul tomato jalapeno, whatever outbreak. And one of the things that's clear is that a lot of the epidemiologists do not have good data management skills as opposed to statistical skills, which they may or may not have. And in fact, data management, while it hasn't been the source of the problems in this outbreak, I wouldn't want to suggest that, but certainly has been a problem, and it's something that would free up a lot of time if people were better at it. So we are in the process now of developing a whole new iteration of this database. And in the interest of time, I'm going to say that we've got all this kind of stuff going on in the state now. These should be familiar to a lot of you that know state programs. There are TB management programs. There are HIV and so on, ELR. And so we are coming up with an integrated surveillance and case management tool that will combine all this stuff. It will have, instead of one program for each of the major program areas, we will have one program that will cover all of these with security that will separate them for people who don't need to have access to the data in the other one. But this is particularly an issue because at our local health departments, while I never look at the TB records and I never get into the HIV stuff, in many of our counties, the people who do the TB, the STD, they're the same people that are doing salmonellosis and hepatitis. And for them, having to flip around with diseases that they actually are doing very infrequently, and there's turnover in the department. So keeping people trained in the ability even to use these and use them appropriately and get everything out of them that they can is an issue. For the first time, we're going to have we anticipate having good ELR integration, not just being able to retype all the information we get from ELR, but actually pull it automatically into the database, both to create new potential cases that will be vetted by real people before they're accepted officially, but also to append new data that come in on existing cases. And our little pitch, this is built in FileMaker, which is just an off-the-shelf relational database program, in some ways much like Access, but not exactly. We'll have a single system that will be housed on a secure server centrally, just as our current FileMaker databases are. It is a person-centric model, but to most users it will appear to be a case-centric system. The advantage of that is in those diseases where people are interested in people having multiple diseases or tracking over time, they'll be able to do that quite easily. Where cases and contacts are involved, contacts turning into cases, cases occasionally being contacts for other people, we'll be able to do this relatively efficiently. And the model is not to do this through a web browser, which has some disadvantages, which we'd be happy to acknowledge and discuss, but it has some advantages because it gives us a much more flexible development environment, and we'll be able to deploy this to our local health departments as well as around our office, I think in a very robust way. And again, we are continuing to be the primary developers of record, but in fact we have hired somebody that I'm now introducing, who is Matt Navarre. He is has no public health background until he started this project, but he's a FileMaker developer and with quite extensive experience in developing databases. And we've been working with Matt now for about close to a year developing this, and it is still in development. We are not using the new version, but we are getting close to having, we are now having some testing going on in local health departments as well as at our department. We continue, those of us who are epidemiologists, continue to do some of the coding for this, and Matt may talk about that. If I get particularly interested in an area, I'll say, I really want to make something here that'll be cool, and I'll put that in there. So we are still learning, and other people in our office are learning and applying these skills, but Matt is the overall driver of it now. So without further ado, Matt Navarre.
Thanks, I've got this. Thanks, Bill. Now we launch into the demo. So actually, one point that Bill, you just made was that other epidemiologists had developed a lot of the code. I think that's actually a core part of this whole approach, is that not only do the epidemiologists who have the skills to do some development, who I can actually sit down with and train them on doing some code, which FileMaker, one of the benefits is it's much easier to use than other tools in that way. So I guess about, what, five or six of the epis are actually writing code as part of this solution. Some of them are doing it right now in Portland while we're here. And then the remaining epis that didn't have the interest to go down that road for those skills, I sit down with them directly, and while they're watching, we're actually developing code. So even though they might not understand 100% of what they're seeing, they can see the exact result of the before and after. And I think that's a huge to get a really accurate, fast result. And so I guess you'll be the judge of that when you take a look at what we've been able to make over the last few months. So this is the sort of the home screen of the system. From here you can get a list of recent cases. You can just put in a different date and go back to a farther date and time and get more cases in there, or look at just today. You can get to any of these cases just by clicking into it. So if I went to this pertussis case, I can go into the details for the case. And then right, this is also all fake data. So from here, you've got a lot of different tabs in the system. And the system was also built so that you don't have to do much scrolling. Some of the other systems I see, you have like a mile-long screen you have to go up and down. And we really tried to build this for, you know, the typical size computer screens that people have today and take that into consideration. Bill, you also pointed out that a lot of the users who use this in the smaller counties, They enter all their diseases, and because they're a really small county with maybe a population of 10,000 or something like that, they're not using it all day every day. So making the system really easy to use was key, because the people, you know, they really just need to have something that they don't have to think about when they get into it. So those are our kind of design objectives. So as we click around, we can see the different labs for the case. and multiple different lab results come to the same centralized screen. It has a contact tracing system over here under contacts. And a lot of deduplication. There's a Google-style search feature that's everywhere, so if you want to find everybody who's named Smith, you can just put that in, and it does a database search across all tables where there might be a name, or you can put in a date or an ID or any kind of thing in your system that you'd be able to want to quickly search on, and then just click right to that specific record to go to that case. So there's a person-centric table. This particular person doesn't have any cases, otherwise they'd have a case listed down here. Whereas if I went to Rob Smith, which is actually Robert Smith or Rob Smithers, both of them come up, and I can actually see this person has several cases, one of which is a case of salmonella in Curry County. So here you can see different notes and feedback. So to start a case, you would to go to create case, and this actually does a pretty exhaustive search to try to prevent duplicates. So if I went in here and said we've got like Jerry Jones, and if you type it wrong, if you put in the names backwards, then you just click the switch button and it changes them. So little data entry errors that we see users making all the time, we can put little widgets in to fix those things because that happens pretty often. Date of birth, we can put in. It takes dates in different formats. And then we can put in what the disease is. We'll use Salmonella today. It has a list, so we don't have to type too much. The institution thing is really good for outbreaks, because we might have outbreaks in jails or nursing homes or schools. And so this gets the address of those locations exactly the same for all the cases. And then this is a list that can be maintained. A lot of the different lists are actually very data-driven. So let's say that Jerry Jones is in Jackson County Jail, to go with our J theme. I didn't even think of that till now. And then we just click set, and that looks up the address for that particular location, and I can go ahead and create the case. So now it actually does a big search to see if it can find it, and actually it found a Jacob Jones with the same birthday. So I have to decide, is this the same person or is this a different person? So maybe we'll discover, actually these are, maybe they're twins or something. So we have to decide, is it the same person or different? So I can say ignore the match, and we're actually just going to go ahead and create a new person for Jerry Jones, and Jacob will be his brother, or not. You know, maybe they're unrelated and they're just born the same day. It asks me if I'm sure. I say yes, and then now a case is created that looks just like a case that has been in the system for a while, and I can start working it up. So one of the couple things I want to show there are the risks to enter. It gives us all the risk questions defined by the disease, and I can click Ask Risk Questions, and this brings up a questionnaire. This is designed to be done while you're on the phone with a patient. So it asks you the questions, you know, in really bold type over here. Does the case have any contact with diapered people? You can say yes or no. If you say no, then it just skips right to the next question. Up here it shows you exactly where you are. If you answer a question yes, then it asks you, okay, well, give me some follow-up details, you know, more notes here. And then just go to the next question. You can skip directly to other questions. Rare raw meat, yes. Skip backwards here. Handle pet treats, no, or refused. And then when you get done with the very last question, it just closes that form and goes back to the case. Or does it? It's supposed to do that. Right, so like that. And then you can view those answers in a couple of different ways. You can view them either as a list like this, or sort of more in a report format. And then they're color-coded answers. The other way we built this is the actual answers to the risk questions are all populated for all diseases in the same table, so that the same relative risk is used, I guess with the same OID, would be used for all diseases, so that you'd be able to get reports for a single risk across multiple diseases in the same group, or even diseases in different groups. Contact tracing modules is good because it uses that same master person index. So if I create a contact, and I'll say that Robert Smith maybe lives in the same house, and maybe I don't know Robert Smith's date of birth right now, but I do know he's a male. I can create a contact. It warns me about date of birth, and it looks up anyone who might possibly match Robert Smith. And I actually have the actual Robert Smith I'm looking for, who oddly is also born 1-1-1970. not very imaginative when making up dates for fake data, I guess. And so I click him, and now I've got the Robert Smith record, and I can say what the relationship is between them. Maybe they're coworkers, or maybe he's in the same household. And what was the date contacted? And then based on what disease I'm tracking, I get different information down here at the bottom for prophy and for notes. So for example, if this was an STD case, one of the things that very commonly happens is you don't have all the information for the contact. Maybe you just know it's a guy who's very large and he's, you know, 7 feet tall and he has a tattoo on his neck and he hangs out at a certain bar and his name is Bob, but you don't know any more detail. But he was exposed to your case, so you send a worker to the bar and find the guy. And then when you have the information, you can put all his demographics in. 5 minute warning. Let's see. Yeah, that would be a good one. So one of the other things we've integrated with is ELR. And you can start a case from ELR, or you can add a lab to an existing case from ELR. So for example, if you hand entered a case just like you did there, and then a month later or a day later, an electronic lab report comes in for that patient, you can automatically link it to the existing case. Or in this case, I just put in a few fake records. So there's a negative one I'm going to ignore. But then there's this Meredith Weber. And I can look at the actual lab. I can see the tests and the results and everything from this lab. Actually, this one doesn't have the results in there because I created the fake record only earlier today. But presuming this was an actual real record, I'll go ahead and create the case, which actually just does a search. Again, exact same screen that we've already seen for Salmonella. And it would look up the address and everything. And then also this is going to be for Curry County. I didn't actually see if there was an address. And then we'll go ahead and create a case and automatically link that ELR record. So that's really good because it prevents typing errors, because assuming that the lab had the information right, you don't have one extra opportunity to make a typo, which is, I think, a really good thing. Also, you know, that was a way faster way to do it than typing all that information directly. And then ELRs come, they just automatically populate. So when the user logs into the system, they would get a list of all their ELRs for the day. County transfer is another thing that was really important to the users. They were tired of having to fax cases from one county to another. Very often in the largest county in the state, your labs will be sort of in that area. So you get a lot of false reports that will be tagged for that county, but there will actually be cases who live in the surrounding counties. Let's say that was the case here. I just go in and change the county from Curry to, and I choose my list of counties. So again, I don't have to have Multnomah County spelled five different ways because it's not an easy one to spell. That will say, okay, I'm going to start a transfer from Curry to Multnomah County. What's the reason for the transfer? Default is move, because that's the most common reason. Or it could have been incorrect, you know, incorrect county. And then when I choose that, it actually changes it. I get a log history, so I can go to my log and I can see exactly in a human readable format what changes have happened to the case and who did them, including viewing the case so that you can get security. If you've got people just clicking around looking at records, you get that information is tracked as well. And then when I log in, if I'm in Curry County, or if I'm in Multnomah, here that case is. So the Multnomah County Epi logs in and they see, oh yeah, you've got two incoming transfers. Do you want to click on this? And when they click on it, it will accept that case. And then now the county transfer is complete. So that's kind of a nice, simple way to navigate that. The one other small thing I want to show, and it looks like you might have something to say here, is the way that we can drive this is if I go into preferences, there's a list of all the diseases that this database tracks. And it's a pretty long list. All the ones that are in light gray color here are the ones that aren't really having any cases right now, but it might potentially be an outbreak of that thing. So it's still in the database to use. So if I go to Salmonella, I get a list of all the risk codes and types and everything else for that particular disease. So really easy to enter, so all these variables are actually all settable by the users of the system.
Yeah, and this is the kind of stuff that the normal user would never see, but people who are setting it up or want to have privileges to, you know, add questions. Let me save Jason the awkwardness of having to give us the hook by...
Oh, I already got the hook.
Oh, okay, but by saying that, so what we think we're going to have, and I think we are going to have, is basically a full-featured surveillance database program. And if you act now, you can get this for free. Because we own the code, Oregon State, and we will basically make it available to anybody that wants it. I mean, there's no particular vision of spreading this around
except Matt, I think, has dreams of being a lifetime support person for it and charging handily for that. But I mentioned that cost is not really what's driving this, but I think we will spend somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 on the development of this. And that will kind of be it. And then our maintenance costs will be, we have FileMaker licenses that we buy for as many people as needed, and in bulk those run about $100 a piece. There's some hardware that allows you to run this better than just kind of running it off your laptop at home. And that totals up to probably in the neighborhood of $40,000 or $50,000 for our state with 30 or 40 health departments and local. It's pretty cheap compared to most systems. But again, I don't think we're going to try and compete, period. But we're certainly not trying to compete on price. But I think you'll find this, would find this similar to, in terms of scope and functionality, a lot of other systems, but actually quite nice. And if people are interested in exploring it for your state, we could probably set you up with a demo, or if you wait a month or two. It's moving, but we're getting to the stage now where we're not adding too many features. We're instead backfilling in all the risk questions and all that.
Will this be compliant with CDC's HL7?
Who cares about that? I mean, I think so, isn't it? Is it?
Yes, there's HL7. Oh, yes. Actually, on a case, we have HL7 code in here now. This is sort of in testing mode, but it actually generates the HL7 string that gets sent to CDC. This is a sort of a mishmash of a couple different diseases, but the raw materials are there.
Yeah, so we'll be able to report. We'll be able, in the short term, we'll report using NETs, which is what we do now. I mean, that's relatively simple and straightforward. You know, code it out once and then you're done. But
right.
It certainly has the capacity to do all of this if you put enough parsing time into it.
So thanks very much.
Yep. Thank you very much, Bill and Matt. So with that, what I'd like to do is open it up for questions. And if I could ask, it might be easiest if each of the presenters come up here, since there are three chairs and we have actually some active mics up here. Yep. I was going to say you can exchange your mic. So, questions?
Hi. I was going to actually ask the last two presenters, and I think you actually covered it, Bill, about the reusability of your work. I assume you can load a different county list in fairly easily. I'd like to ask Dr. Wu about the possible reuse of the publication screener and finding colleagues. I'm wondering if it was particularly easy because in genomics you have a very specific taxonomy for gene names. Would you think it would be applicable to other fields?
Yeah, I think actually for this, I'm assuming you're talking about gap screening, which screen the literature. It's nothing to do with actually the gene, actually, but it's part of the your. It depends on what you're working on, what your interest in terms of literature. But for our case, maybe it's good because just what you say is maybe genetics, human genetics, the century, maybe a lot of a unique characteristic for that particular group of literature. But I'm using the spread vector machine, which is you can train, if you have a positive and negative data set, you can train the SVM, and then if you can come up with a good model, you can give it a try, actually. It's you never know. So that's the everything behind, the black box, basically. So this depends on the key thing is your training set. You have to have really the set of the publication you're interested in, and something you really want to get rid of. So that you have just two data sets, so it's doable, can apply to any kind of domain. So if you want more information, I'm more happy to give you more. So.
Additional questions?
Did you have another?
again for Dr. Wu, how did you measure the sensitivity for the tool versus the human? What was your gold standard?
Yes, actually, so we have in epidemiology perspective, so this a 2x2 table, basically. We have the way we look, okay, because we have our old way to screen the literature, which we know we have in terms of positive tests in our database. Okay, and then this is positive one and the negative one, negative which actually is the background from the general plan. And then in the end, we have because the training, so we know when we do the training, so we just split, and back a little bit. Okay, so we have, for example, 10,000, positive one, 10,000 negative one, and we split like 80% for training.
But anyway, so that's, I'm trying to speak. Okay, so that's much easier.
So basically we split into training set and testing set. So we are able to tell which one is false positive, false negative, which one true positive, true negative, which 2x2. You can easily get sensitivity, specificity, and other parameter. So that should be able to do it.
On the global, you're talking about open source. Are there any specific recommendations? Are you talking about Linux and the open source softwares like MySQL, database, Postgres, that type? Or are you, how are we moving forward? In other words, what recommendations are you making and how are people collaborating on that?
We're not at the recommendations point right now. As a global partners group, we are identifying the low-hanging fruit. We're identifying groups that are working on particular development projects, and one of those is the OpenMRS development of medical record systems. Another, there's an lab system, ELIS, open lab system that is being developed. The global partners may eventually become an organization that makes recommendations. We are not at that point. We are at this point wanting to identify and match up individuals who have questions about developments and projects in CDC, at the World Health Organization, outside of governmental organizations, but to be a forum for identifying what is going on and making sure that people know about each other and groups know about each other. And so again, we're more of a matchmaking organization, and I think that some of the conversations we're having right now that Tad and we're having with CDC and also with the World Health Organization, that is one of the opportunities to move forward with standards-based development that identifies for countries where there are activities that are developed in a standards-based framework that they should consider as they are making decisions.
Okay. Additional questions? So, Bill, I have a question for you. So, have your colleagues seen this new interface? And if so, how have they reacted based on sort of what the previous system looked like?
Well, again, our colleagues are around the board. The colleagues that are in the office are the ones creating the system. So, yeah, they've been seeing it and working on it and different aspects of it. There are only two or three of us, I think, that have been writing sort of nitty-gritty of the code. And, again, Matt doing about 90% of that. And then the rest of us, when we have time, we'll play around in some little area. Our counties have been using either no computer system but using paper forms to date. The larger counties, though, have adopted some years ago a system developed by one of our counties, sort of in protest to the lousy system that we had at that time, which was terrible. So the same reason that we started to develop our previous system. And that's been sort of a source of, frankly, some friction
because now we have two kind of incompatible systems and we're creating another one. We are telling the counties that they will be able to continue using that system, and they will be able to. I think we are going to pressure them increasingly to phase it out, and we are hoping that when they see all the features that this offers and get exposed to it, I mean, it's obviously different from what they're using, but it's frankly a lot better. And anybody who stops and thinks about it for 5 or 10 minutes will think it's better. And we think it will sell itself to the counties, and we won't have to really force people out. So after, you know, 6 months or a year, we hope to be down to 0 to 1 or 2 counties still using the old system, and eventually they'll give up too. So we're also piloting it and getting a lot of feedback from counties. So yeah, it has been showed and demoed, and we actually have some counties that we're asking to enter it. They're giving us feedback. We're making changes because counties do stuff that doesn't occur to us. I mean, we're very much focused on summaries of records, line lists of records, what we consider bigger pictures, and the counties are much more focused typically on workload and getting an individual case record in there. They don't notice that all the stuff was mistyped in their old one because they don't run summary reports. And just little things like that. So they're also charged with getting workload reports, how many cases they worked up. So they're very interested in the things that don't turn out to be cases, whereas at the state level, we're only interested in the reportable stuff, and if it wasn't a case, we don't care about it. So we've tried to accommodate that.
To follow up with what Bill said, can you all hear me if I stand this way? This interface that Matt showed, at least the basic CAB type of interface, of course he's showing the reports now, but the interface that he showed earlier with the tabs was pretty much emulated from how the county's system interface looks than how the state system looks. So we took a lot of that as pretty much like the user requirements, if you will, very similar to what the county interface looks now, their model, and we'll continue to import data from the counties as long as they're using whatever system they're going to use, I think. So not to contradict too much.
Right, that does impose some overhead, which we are going through now. I mean, that's overhead that we already have, because we have to figure out how to map their data to our existing database. The new database is actually not that similar to our existing database, so we will have to remap that stuff. And once it's done, it kind of works, but in the long term, I think we will be transitioning to this for everybody.
Yeah, the ideal world is to have everybody on the same system, and that gives this, that's the I think, a selling point for this system.
Thanks.
Sir, any additional questions? I have another question. So, maybe perhaps last question for Wei. So natural language processing is a pretty interesting and hot area, but you've made a specific choice to use SVM, or Support Vector Machine, with regard to the work you're doing. So I wonder if you could talk a little bit about that choice, why you chose Support Vector Machine, and also considering that it's a learning engine, how long it has taken to teach it to be as smart as you've gotten it to be smart.
So in terms of why using, because there's a variety of different kind of learning mechanism, for example, neural network or other, you know, machine learning technique. But the SVM, the reason I chose this, you know, this is, according to studies, relatively, you know, the SVM is performed better than the other, like neural network. Well, one of the key, I want to choose that because there's, you know, because I want to not just experimenting stuff, I want to build a tool, because this tool is downloadable, we can, you know. So the one I'm using is there's open source Java source code available for the SVM. I integrate into my whole program easily. So imagine if there's something I can write my own family stuff, is no way. So that's one other key thing I consider. But it's turned out pretty good. But in another way, if I can use other methodology to do a comparison, but if you achieve the sensitivity like 97.5%, it's there's little room to improve. There's no
know in the networks to do more. Okay, so what's the other, I'm sorry.
How long it took to learn?
Oh, well, it depends on your data. For example, so our training set is 10,000 records, abstract basically, for positive and 10,000 for negative. So usually take 1 to 2 hours to get the kind of like result, but it's you know, considered overall because you have to tune up a lot of parameters. So the FM, there's so many parameters you can figure out because, you know, to get the maximum result. It take a while to do this, but once you have this model, like here, so you can, you know, it's there. So that's good about this. It's pretty, but usually it's the most time I spend on this development this tool is not training. Basically, it's a lot of you know, data manipulation. For example, how you're going to get abstract out of it. What's the, you know, variable, like we call the features. What feature you're using for it's the text. How are you going to do this training? So there's a whole bunch of, you know, methodology. Again, I don't have, you know, 1 minute, right? So it's go by reference. So it will tell you, you know, difference. If you, you know, some of you are interested, I can, you know, we can talk offline about this.
I have a really quick comment and maybe a question, but we can talk about it offline. One of my comments was I've done some work like this myself, and being able to do graphical mapping and show research connections or connections among researchers visually, I was wondering if you were thinking about going in that direction, because if you are, I'd be delighted to talk to you about some of our experience in doing that with research findings.
Exactly. That's a wonder, because this tool is we developed in-house, basically. But right now we have some collaboration with Georgia Tech down, you know, in local, but they have some graphic, you know, expertise in order to make graphic. But this is beyond my skill. But we will have, we already talk about to see, for example, the network, you know, like the graphic to see all the.
We'd be interested in talking to you, because that's what my research group is.
Okay, good, good, good. All right.
Thank you, everyone. Any final questions? No? Great. So I'd like to thank the speakers today. Thank you very much.